1947, after the Eckstein band broke up, we took a trip to Africa. We were in the interior of Nigeria because I wanted to live among the people and find out just how they lived and about the drums especially. The drum is the most important instrument there.
So here we are. We are at the Brownswood Basement, and this is an incredible moment for me because I've got probably the most incredible, influential musician that's ever appeared in this basement, Mr. Tony Allen.
Yeah, it's a nice basement.
Oh yeah, well it's got a few little surprises in there, including a packet of Three Kings. Three King cigarettes, which I actually picked up when I was in the Shrine a few years ago. I was there with Femi Guti, and I slipped into Fella's old bedroom. Not a lot had changed, actually. They kept all the furniture.
Yeah, they kept everything.
And I sort of sneak. I did ask Femi, but I took a packet just as a memory of that day. So it's brilliant to see you. It's great to see that you've got a brand new LP and a brand new record label as well.
Right, yeah.
So what happened with that, and how did you get yourself onto World Circuit Records?
Oh, well, you know, I mean, maybe it should have happened longest time ago, but sometimes you always wait for time for things to happen, you know, because Nick saw me playing the Barbican sometimes, and he invited me to Omusangari's album at that, I think about 7 years ago. And at the end of the day, anyway, I mean, I think they couldn't use my own stuff, you know, kind of. But my drumming is weird, kind of weird for Omo at that time, I thought. But as time goes on, I've been doing my thing everywhere, you know. But this time around, but you know, at that time, Nick thought, you know, we could work together. But I was having different labels then, you know, so it was not possible. We waited for the time, and this is the time that this music, you know, I never even thought of Nick, but my publisher, them, they thought about him that, oh, he should be the right person to listen to this music. And they took it to him, and he listened to it, and I think he said, oh yeah, okay. So from there, we started, you know.
Fantastic. Well, you've fallen into the laps of probably the most influential, and you know he's done so much for world music.
Yeah.
I mean, do you call it world music? Is that a bad term for you? How do you, does that
world
feel?
World music. Every time I don't understand it yet. Maybe you could explain it to me a bit. You know about world music. You know why is it world music?
Well, I'm always trying to work that out myself. I mean, in a way, it's obviously music from around the world. It's an easy way to describe music that isn't necessarily from the UK. But I think it's probably an outdated term now. I think it kind of, you know, was relevant a few years ago. But I think now there is so much sort of everything is world music now.
Exactly.
Right?
Because we should call every music world music then, you know? That be the case.
Let's talk a bit about the very beginnings for you. This is what really fascinates me. First of all, as a drummer, you started off as a studio engineer, right?
Yeah, kind of repairing the stuffs. That was my job, you know, repairing them stuffs, you know, broken. That was my job.
You can help me out here.
If I have the time, man.
And so... Drumming for you obviously became something very serious. Were you able to hear influences? Who were your early influences in terms of the drummers and the kind of music you were listening to?
You know, as a matter of fact, apart from listening to the local stuffs when I was growing up, because my father always let us have the taste of what it is to be in the local music. You know, like my father plays guitar. But he never used it for a living. It's just to amuse us at home, you know. And I think I listened to him and his friends, our normal native stuffs, you know, juju music, you know, folkloric, you know. But that never inspired me. But I just knew that there was music in the house. But then, when I grew up myself, being able to crawl the night myself, club crawling.
Yeah.
So I started developing interest in the bands, you know. And as a matter of fact, I was listening to a lot of jazz records from on the radio, which are Blue Notes, or just Blue Notes records, you know. And as time goes on, I knew that I would like to play drums, because the drums is the only instrument to me that is kind of magical for me, apart from all the horns and things. And I started to listen to Gene Krupa, and Gene Krupa was so good then to me, you know. Then after, as time goes on, Blue Notes records started coming in. Then I started to listen to Art Blakey. So Art Blakey, Irving Jones, and all those them stuff. I saw two different ways of drumming now, you know. Both of them are playing jazz, but one is different. And I prefer to go on Art Blakey's side, because he's more playing the drums, man.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, he was influenced by Afro-Cuban rhythms a lot.
Yes, and he was in Africa before too, you know, so he had gathered a lot, you know. So I never wondered when I read his history on his book called The Belge. I think it's Charlie Parker's book. I read about him there, that he was with us before, traveling to Ghana, Nigeria, you know, for 2 years. I think he must have got enough. So, and he was able to send it back to us for us to even start learning from what belongs to us, what sent back to us in a different way. So, it was good inspiration for me.
And you started quite late, actually, playing the drums, right?
Yeah. I think I was drumming inside my head already before I picked it up, you know what I mean?
And when you actually decided to make a career out of it, how did your family feel about it? You were living in Lagos.
My mother was number one that never accepted it. She's just told me, no. I said, but when I made up my mind already, because I stopped my job already, and it became some kind of problem in the house, the argument, you know. But my father was the only one that would tell me not to do something, then I didn't do it, you see. So, and when my father hard about me going to play music instead of leaving my job to play music? Well, he just laughed. He said, well, what can he do? I've left my job already anyway, so he has to do something. Then he said, let him go and do it. My father said, let him go and do it. If he goes there, if he doesn't, if the road is clumsy, he might come back.
Yeah.
Comes back, and then maybe choose the right way again. But I knew quite well that when I put my feet in there, I'm not going to come back. You know? But I did. And 18 months later, something blew into my face. Like, the band was disbanded. I never committed no offense, you know, so, but when it's coming from the top. And then that made me stay away 6 months. I said, I'm not going to go back to music anymore because I hate to be jobless, you know.
So which band was this?
This was Cool Cats. Cool Cats, you know, led by Steve Wollersen. 6 months later, because I went back to start reading again, studying, get my City and Guilds on electronics. But 6 months, they never let me finish my studies. They came to drag me out again for a new band called Agunoris and the Heat Waves. 6 months later. So from that time till now, I never stopped, you know?
Incredible. An incredible career. And you're like a lot of drummers. I don't know what it is about the actual, you know, being a drummer, but it's a long life. I mean, Chico Hamilton's still doing it, Steve Reed's still doing it, Art Blakey was doing it for years and years. Mm. You've still got as much energy as ever. I mean, is it a fitness thing as well?
I think so. I think drumming by itself is an exercise, you know. If you would play 6 hours a night or 4 hours, 2 hours, you know, you're exercising your limbs all over. I think it's a good exercise.
Yeah, absolutely. Tell me about, actually, one thing I wanted to ask you, because Fella, he had a radio show.
Right.
Did you hear him on the radio before you met him as a person?
No. I was going with him to do his radio programs. You know, I used to sit down by him when he's reading news sometimes, when he's presenting records, before he decided not to present records anymore. That now he has to do it live. All them jazz albums, Blue Notes we're listening to, he decided to for us to play them live. So he was having Fela Ransom Kuti and the quartet. Fela Ransom Kuti and jazz quartet. Then.
Oh, I see. So he'd play the music live in the studio.
Yeah. We were playing strictly 1 year. Him and me, we were doing live jazz music.
Wow. Is there some recordings of that?
They must have it in the NBC, radio, NBC, NBC, Lagos.
That's the Fela Kuti, Tony Allen jazz quartet.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
And that's before Kula Lobitos.
Oh, yes, exactly.
And all that stuff. That's incredible. Wow, I need to dig that stuff out. And, like, would you do cover versions? Would you do standards as well when you were doing that? Or was it all original material?
No, all I did, they're all copyrights, you know. It's all... recorded music before, but he doesn't want to play the records. He wants to play it himself.
But would you do versions of songs that you were listening on Blue Note?
Yes.
So you'd do Moaning or something?
Moaning, all those them stuffs, you know. You know, Child's Play, you know, we've done it, you know, several times, you know. So 1 year, full year, you know, I was playing his own music.
Wow. Incredible. Now, one thing I wanted to... You obviously go back to Lagos sometimes. You did some mixing of your new album in Lagos.
Yeah.
Can you kind of describe to me the difference between Lagos today and Lagos in 1968? Is it wildly different?
Well, it's different completely because at that time, you just mentioned, things were so cool, you know? You can go out in the night at any time. Anytime you feel like coming out of your house, you are safe. It's not as safe like that today again, you know? Just because of the military era had already eradicated many things, you know, because the country became military country. That's gone everywhere. And this is a country now that many graduates don't have job, you know? So what are they going to turn to? They know every so all the madness in the country today is just It's just because things are getting worse, not better.
Mm. And all the political messages that were prominent in the music that you were recording with Fela, did anybody listen?
Those ones that are supposed to listen are the ones that don't listen. Because if there should be any change at all, the change must come from the top, you know? And then the people down will follow. But when the top doesn't listen, they listen, but they don't have the power to change anything. So they still remain in the same shit. And the authorities don't listen.
Yeah.
That's why there was problems, you know, in the past, you know. It was too much for them, you know, to have one guy, you know, so powerful like that, you know, that can send messages and it can even mention names, you know. So, you know, it was terrible for them, you know.
I wanted to ask you a bit about, we were saying about Art Blakey going to Africa, Nigeria, Ghana, spending a couple of years there, taking it in. Did you ever meet Lester Bowie? Because he did the same thing, right?
Oh, Lester was with us, you know. Lester was a friend. He was almost living with us, I would say. You know, we see him every day. And we ended up in the studio together, you know. It was on one of Fela's albums, you know. So we did all that together. Because it was just after the burning of Fela's house, you know. And Lester was there for Festac. And we remained Fela's friends, you know.
Were there any other musicians, Americans, that you sort of hung out with or that spent some time?
Randy Weston.
Wow.
Yeah, you know, Randy Weston was Fela's friend too, you know. He was passing by, he was coming on stage, he was playing with us.
Incredible.
Yeah. You know, Himasekela and all of them guys, you know, passing through the house, you know.
And did you live in the Shrine?
I never lived in the Shrine. I just passed by, you know, every day.
I imagine that everybody lived in the Shrine that was in the band.
Never. No. None of the musicians live with Fela. That's one thing. Except the singers. And you know the singers, they are his wives. So automatically they have to live with him as their husband. You know.
And did Sun Ra ever come to Nigeria? Sun Ra?
Sun Ra, I'm not sure. He never came.
Did you ever meet him?
No. I never met Sun Ra himself, no. I just met David Conrad. Last 3 months ago or something in Paris. He came to play. You know that his children, I'm working with his children, Hypnotic Brass.
Which we did a session with you in a Maid of El, which was amazing. That's incredible. The Philip Cohen. Is that eight of them?
Eight of them, yeah.
And they are the Hypnotic Brass ensemble?
Yes.
That's just crazy. know? Is he still alive, Philip?
Of course. I saw him three months ago.
Right.
In Paris.
Right.
His children, they came to play with him too.
And he lives in Paris as well?
No. They all came from Chicago.
Chicago. Yeah. Wow. Yeah, because, I mean, actually, talking of places to live, you live in Paris now.
Yeah.
Randy Weston lives in Paris.
I don't know if he lives in Paris, but sometimes he might, because it seems I've seen him about two occasions somewhere, you know, hanging around the other clubs, you know. He might be living in Paris. I think he lives in the States.
It seems to me that Paris is a place that a lot of people have obviously fallen in love with.
Most of the jazz guys there, most of them are in Saint-Germain, to prayer, you know, around Saint-Michel. You know, most of them are living around there.
And how long have you been there for?
Me, I've been there for 24 years.
And is it a good place for you? You're happy there?
I'm happy because when we're talking about music, it's the only place I find music easy for me to get together, you know, easily, you know. Those guys over there, they believe in me, they know me, they know that I don't ever call them for shit, you know. It's very good for, you know, getting your music together.
Yeah, because you had the choice in a way of coming to live in England because you spent some time here, but you chose
to record this one.
Never expect power, always.
With Jumbo,
yeah.
You know.
In fact, Never Expect Power Always for me was the first time I discovered you as a DJ, because I bought this record. And this is even before I knew that you were in Fella's band, actually. The time that was like a new artist called Tony Allen.
Fella for 15 fucking years, man.
1988?
No? Yes, 1988.
Yeah.
It was recorded 85.
And it sounds wicked now. NEPA, Tony Allen, let's play it. Okay, let's talk a little bit about. I want to hear a little bit about. I mean, you were with Fella for many, many years. Actually, the first thing I've got to ask you about. Brian Eno calls you the greatest living drummer. You've worked with Damon Albarn, of course, who's a big fan of yours. You originated Afrobeat, which is a rhythm that keeps going and you never grow tired of it. Did you plan it out?
Plan it?
Yeah. What is Afrobeat?
Already, you know, Afrobeat, the explanation of Afrobeat is like, it is combination of other rhythms, different rhythms together, you know, and you put them together, you fuse them together and send it once, you know. So it's combination. So it's like for me, you know, when I'm writing, it comes, you know, it's got to come. When I start it, I tell myself I want to write something today that I never played before. You know what I mean? Because I get bored with repeating myself, you know. So sometimes I could repeat one particular pattern twice or thrice on an album, but if you check it, you will see that it's the same pattern, but you will never recognize it if you don't check properly because of the way what I put on it. I always like to write different grooves. It's grooves, me. I'm for grooves, you know. I don't think about anything than grooves. I don't want to be flashy drummer, just, you know, playing everything everywhere. I could do that if I want, you know, but I want you to know how the mechanism of the drums, how it's rolling. And that's by, you know, it's patience and collectivity of everything together. You know what I mean? It's my way of life too. You know, I get bored quick with something.
I tell you, there are some incredible tracks that have just, I can play them forever as a DJ. Obviously, a lot of fella tracks. Tracks like Ruffa Ruffa Fight. I played that the other day. It's 16 minutes long.
Yeah. Ruffa Ruffa Fight, and it's a good composition there anyway. And the work of Ruffa Ruffa Fight was something. Yeah.
Ruffa Ruffa Fight. They want to go to work. 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 Over Guadaya, over Bubaya, over Guadaya, over Bubaya, over Chicotoya, over Bibia, over Chicotoya, over Bibia, over Tibitu, over Divia, over Tibitu, over Tibia, over where ya, they want to go to work. They want to go to work.
From Abeokuta City.
Translation to original English.
She pulled the thing come out.
Because Fela being a genius himself, you know, Fela is a genius by writing. Regardless of his way of life, musically, that's, he made me to, because I was with him, we started this thing together, that's why I was able to achieve what I am today. Because I was looking for such guy to work with, you know, because I won't improve. It's like Miles Davis said, if you want to be a great musician all the time, that you don't want to go down, you better work with those ones in the same level like you, or even better. Then you have nothing to lose, which is true.
What was the greatest moment with Fela, musically speaking? When was the moment where the band, everyone was on the same plateau, the same bubble, the same space? When was the perfect time? Do you remember?
It's in the 70s. You know, everything we have done between 70 to 78, fantastic. you know. I was happy to be there then, you know, because we built it together, and I saw it through to the utmost. I mean, what would I call it? But at the time, I just have to quit, because I think I got enough.
So you did what, 10 years of Africa 70?
15 years. 15. Oh, yeah. 10 years of Africa 70 and 5 years of Kula Lubitus.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which a lot of people don't probably know, because a lot of the records have been re-released as Fela Kuti records.
Yeah, yeah.
But there are some re-releases of that available now. They've all come out eventually. But we haven't yet got the Fela and Tony Allen Jazz Quartet. We're going to...
That one. You see, I think sometimes, you know, check... there are some records of Fela. Although this is the radio one, no, but we have done jazz live at the Afro Spot. Recorded. It's on some of those CDs they released in Nigeria, you know, this big pack.
Yeah, box set.
Mm. You know, so it's on it.
And what would be your favourite tracks? I mean, it's difficult to say, but if you could play like five Fela tracks, what were the sort of the ones that gave you as the drummer the most pleasure, the most satisfaction?
A lot of Confusion. Confusion was one good album that I think I have done. Confusion, I Like My Clothes. You know, Shakara and Lady, them, they were there anyway. So, but everything scatter. You know, there are a lot of good pushy songs. You know, like Give Me Bread Before I Jump Like Monkey. You know, No Bread. You know, all them tracks. Yeah, something, you know. Zumbi later, you know.
Yeah. You had the Shrine, and you had... Where was the live performances? Where did you perform? At the Afro Spot, or...?
Yeah, we were performing from Afro Spot to Suru Lele Nightclub, then to the Shrine.
Yeah. Actually, I'm getting confused. The Shrine... was the club, which has just been rebuilt.
Yeah.
And the Calicutu Republic was where... Republic.
That's where the first shrine was situated there, near Fela's house. Yeah.
And how did it work? I mean, what was the day that you'd perform? Was it once a week you'd play there?
Four days in a week.
4 days a week?
Yeah, the Tuesday, Friday, Saturday and Sunday.
And was there a difference between the days and the type of audience that would come and listen?
Yes, for Tuesday's ladies' night. And so... all ladies know they are coming free, and so they're fooling there, and then the guys are the ones paying just for Tuesday nights.
And what was the night that got the most sweaty? What was the latest night that you had? Was it the weekend?
That's Saturday night. Okay. Friday night and Saturday night.
And what was the longest set that you'd play? How long would it be?
6 hours.
6 hours.
Yeah. But that is the normal time. That's the normal time you play with Fela anyway. Why, in Lagos? Yes. 6 hours.
Wow. And so when you went and did gigs around the world and they said you've only got 90 minutes...
Yeah, that's where it's painful. It took me a long time to, you know, to accept it, or to... that, how come? You make me come all the way from somewhere, I travel all the way, you want me to play 75, 45 minutes, 50 minutes. It's kind of... it's not sane, man. It's not the money, you know, they give you the money, but it's not the money I'm after. No, I didn't want to expose what I'm doing. 40 minutes is not enough. You know? You know that 40 minutes for Fela is just like one song or two songs. You know what I mean?
It's, talking to you, what's interesting is I think that you could be a DJ in the sense of there's not much... I mean, just the way you're describing the nights and there'd be a ladies' night on a Tuesday and you're playing for 6 hours. In another life, do you think you could have been a sort of a DJ?
I could be, you know? Yes, why not? Because I know things, I know records, I know sound, you know?
I remember I met you in Brazil, maybe 3 or 4 years ago. We met in the lobby of the hotel. And that was for... what was that for you were doing?
It's for this B-Cross, Brian Cross, together with Mad Lib and everybody. You know, it's like exhibition of, or what would I say? It's like DJ and drummers playing together.
That was Brazilian time?
Yeah, Brazilian time, yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. You see, so it's kind of interesting because I've done it again with him in LA, and I've done it with him in Ireland, in Dublin,
The Irish feel it.
Yeah, you know, it was great for them.
But that's one thing about you as well. I think that you've always been into improvisation and, and trying new things out, which is why I think it's not really been much of a surprise to see that you've performed with people like Charlotte Gainsbourg.
Yeah, yeah.
You played drums on La Ritournelle with Sébastien Tellier. I didn't realise that.
Yeah, I played it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I played it.
And what else did you do? I mean, obviously doing the Brazilian
with,
time stuff.
Yeah, and Rafael, you know, all of them have, they needed my playing, you know, but the point is that I don't see myself everywhere like that, you know, so, you know, I need to take care of myself sometimes.
Tell me a little bit about how you met up with Damon Albarn and how that whole connection came up, because that was a nice surprise.
For Damon, you know, for Damon, it's very simple, you know. He was singing on Music is my Radar, Tony Allen Makes Me Dance. So that made me to check the guy that, what?
So you actually heard the song and you heard him singing Tony Allen Makes Me Dance?
Yeah, yeah. You know, because it's flash, you know, in the song, you know, where you could hear it. Then I wanted to when I was recording Home Cooking, there was one track left because I was inviting guests, you know. One track left on which they were looking for who was going to sing it. And so Brad and B, they are producers here, Unsung Heroes. They told me, they could get Damon to sing it. I said, you could get Damon to sing on my track? He said, yeah. And they told him that Tony wants you to sing on the track. And so we had a meeting somewhere on Cancer Rise. And he said, is it true I want him to sing on my album? I said, of course, yes, if you can do it. Hey, he said, why not? And he came to the studio. First day, he never did it, but it took the music away to his own studio. The next time we see him, the music was done. And I love it. I love it so much. I said, yeah, okay. So now, the day I told him, I said, well, you know, this is great, but I think it would be great if we can do something together from scratch, you know? And it was like that. Everybody was too busy doing something or that, you know, he has to deliver album, deliver his job to EMI and things. And so when he finished, he called me. He said, it's finished now, so we can start getting together. That means I was coming from Paris to London every week. And we did it, and then we went to Lagos and then to record this album with Nigerian musicians, mostly Nigerian musicians. I went with him, Mike Smith, Simon Tong. Those are the musicians from his own side. And with my own bass player from Paris, with the other guys in Nigeria. All the rest from Nigeria, horns, everything, other guitars and things, everything, percussionists. But when we came back, we finished the album 2 weeks, and when we came back, it was too much for him. It was too big. He said it was too big, you know, because he just imagined himself going on the road with this. It's going to be a full house, you know what I mean? I think he just abandoned it and said we should keep on writing. Keep on writing to simplify things. And first of all, we found it difficult to get the type of bass player he wants. He doesn't want a bass player that plays too many things. So he has to go and search for it. So he searched. And he brought in Paul. And since Paul came in, so then it was serious. We were serious now to now putting things down, you know. And that's how we finished with the Good, the Band, the Queen thing, you know? You see?
The Good, the Bad.
And the Queen.
That's right.
Yeah.
I saw that at the Roundhouse. And that was a fantastic show.
Yeah.
And after that, you've been working with him on this Jazz Africa Express project.
Oh, yes. African Express.
Which is just crazy.
Yeah. It's crazy. That's what we did at the Shrine last October, collaboration, you know, everybody was there. It was good.
Let's go back to your career. I've just found this record here, which was somewhere hidden in the basement. It's the Progress album.
Yeah.
Which I picked up a lot of vinyl when I was in Lagos, and most of it is unplayable.
Yeah, for sure. When at that time, I mean, just if you have something that could be played now,
this sounds great. This is almost a mint copy on Coconut Records.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
What shall we play? Shall I play Afro Disco Beat or shall I play Progress?
Because Afro Disco Beat now, you know, is everybody's, because they used it for this film, The Last King of Scotland. So Afro Disco Beat is what they used on the movie, you know. Everybody knows Afro Disco Beat now, more than before, just because it was just on the film, you know. Anyway, play Progress is better.
Yeah?
Yeah.
That kind of leads us on to now, in a way, because you released a few solo albums, of course, and then you released your record for Honest John's, and now just about to come out is Secret Agent, which is a wonderful record. Is it Lemmy who's done the artwork?
No. All the artwork there is done by Worsacket.
Because it looks a little bit like a Lemmy sleeve. Some of it's a bit, the inner sleeve is a bit like, you know, the he did all the fella stuff, didn't he? He did a lot of your stuff early on. I know, maybe not. No, maybe
it's
not.
It's them, all their creation there. They have their department that's doing, you know, all these are photo works, you know. Maybe this one looks like painting. Computer drawing, whatever.
Yeah, it looks good. Talking of computers, do you use drum machines?
It's to write.
To write?
Yeah. It's to write before I go on my drums. Just to work out patterns that I never played before.
Yeah. I want to play a track off this album, which is a little bit different. I really love this track. I think it's my favourite track on the album. You've got accordion on it.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Ijo.
Yeah.
What made you bring the accordion into the mix?
Like I used to do. I always want to make sure that my Afrobeat doesn't sound like anybody's. You know, I have different ideas to put on my Afrobeat, but I don't want to choke it up too much. Still, I just like to still drop some flavors, you know. And my accordion, my keyboardist is playing accordion, you know, and he's a very good accordionist, you know. So I said, let's for the change, let's just use accordion. The sound we're after, man, you know, we want good sound, as long as it's playing something, you know. It sounds strange, because people wonder that, what's accordion doing in Afrobeat? Well, I said, okay. But if you haven't heard it before, do it this first time, we should start getting it.
It's a fantastic track. Let's play that track.
Yeah.
I love my pro rhythm with
Okay, Tony Allen, with Giles Peterson, just going through some of the tracks off the brand new LP coming out on World Circuit Records. The album is called Secret Agent. Are you the secret agent?
No. Because the secret agent will not be me at all, you know. The secret agent is the one you should be careful for. You know, make sure that you watch your back, because you don't need any backstabber.
You certainly don't need no backstabbers. Okay, let's play another track off this album. What do you think we should play right now?
Go for Celebrate, you know. Celebrate is celebrating, and this one, if you want to play anything for now, Celebrate or Bariwo.
Let's go with Celebrate.
Yeah.
Yeah, I want to celebrate the fact that Tony Allen is here right now. Brilliant. Okay, a couple of other questions. I had a few people send me some messages on Twitter, and I asked them if they had any questions for me to ask you, and lots of people were very, very interested in your life and of course what you've done. A couple of people asked me to ask you a little bit about the work that you did with Ginger Baker. Did you ever work with Ginger Baker?
Yes, in Berlin Jazz Festival. Ginger's supposed to be opening show for Fela, but it happened that Ginger would not do it alone, and he wanted me to do it with him. So I did it with him. You know, it was like drums, you know, just drums business, you know, for 1 hour, you know, and it was just cool. And recently I just did this last December, somewhere in Shepherd's Bush. We did a show together for Zildjian.
Oh, okay. So that's the drums.
Yeah.
Are you sponsored?
I have sponsor of my Pearl. Pearl, I have sponsor for Pearl. You know, they gave me new branding drums since.
What does it mean being a drummer sponsored by a drum company? Do they give you everything you need?
Yeah, they give me for Pearl. Pearl gives me everything I need. Anyway, I'm playing, Pearl is going to set up for me.
Right.
But they gave me my own, which I used with the good band, The Queen, you know, which I left it in Damon's studio because I cannot take it to Paris.
Too much stuff.
Yeah.
Another person who's a big fan of yours, we were saying this earlier on, is Brian Eno.
Yeah. I wish to meet him.
You've never met him?
No.
That's crazy.
Yeah, I wish to meet him anyway. I'm just know that it's time factor, you know. I have to catch up with him sometimes, you know.
And another person.
And I even like to do music with him sometimes, if possible. Man.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny because in a way, you've got Damon Albarn and you've got Brian Eno. They're probably the two most important producers.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I like to work with him sometimes. It's my intention.
That's got to happen. Another person that people were asking me about, one of the last recordings that you did with Fela was Africa Centre of the World.
Yeah.
With none other than Roy Ayres.
Oh, yes, yeah.
How was it playing with Vibes and drums and working with him? Because he's such a great person.
Reyes is great. You know? Reyes, you know, I happened to, you know, it's like on that tour, a fella called me for that tour, 1 month tour they did in Nigeria. I left him already, and he called me and he said, he wants to go on tour with Reyes and this, that, so that I should come along. I said, I come along to do what? I said, because I ain't playing with you on stage anymore. I said it, that it's done. I don't want to see that again. But I could do something, which is maybe recording with him. But this time he called me to come on tour with him for, I said, what for? I'm not playing. He said, no, it's not for playing. It's just to do his sound for him, you know, to do his own sound.
Wow.
To assist Raya's engineer. Okay? So I said, let's go. The funny thing was that up 3 days, 3 shows remaining, back in Lagos, after the regions, back in Lagos, 3 days, they have 3 major shows remaining. And Reyes drummer decided to take off back to the States. And he left them, and he left his drums behind, and said they should bring his drums for him, but he's gone. And so that's where, when Reyes have to play a fucking big show that night, and his drummer is not there. So he was trying to maybe to try some of Fela's drummers, because Fela had 2 drummers. He was maybe to try one. So somebody suggested to him that, why are you wasting your time for? Why not meet Tony to play your drums for you? He said, meet Tony. Reyes, Reyes knows Tony to be a sound engineer. So it was. Say, no, you won't be joking, you know. He was just doing that just for Fela, you know. That you want a drummer tonight, that's the right guy. So he came to meet me, he said, they said I could play drums for him. I said, of course, yes. I've been listening to all his music for a whole month. I sit down in front of him, Bernard Puddy, playing a whole month in front of me. I know, so the music is in my head. I might not play like Bernard Puddy, but I know the songs. But I know I will handle them. So I finished the 3 shows for him in Lagos, you know. And so they had to end up in the studio. And I went to the studio with them, just seeing everything off to the end. And there, Fela wrote this Africa Center of the World instantly in the studio. And he doesn't trust his drummers. So he said to this man, he called me again. This time, he thinks I should come and play the drums, because those 2 guys there would not handle it, because it's just instant writing. It's a person like me who need to play the drums. Okay? So I accepted. Then I did it. Well, that was my last gig with him. My last recording.
With Fela and with Reyes.
With Reyes.
That's brilliant. That's a great story. What a great track as well.
Oh, yeah. That's good, man.
Well, listen, I'm really, thank you very much for coming, Tony.
You're welcome.
I really, really appreciate it. I think this is sounding great, and I'm trying to think if there's anything else I need to ask you, but no, I just want to wish you the best for this project. And are you going to be doing any shows in the UK? Have you got live shows?
As soon as this one's, I'm sure we're going to do maybe launching something like that here. Do we arrange it? I'm sure I would know from what circuit where they have reached.
Great. Well, I want to thank you very much for doing the session you did for me with Hypnotic Brass Ensemble, spending some time with me here in the Brownswood basement, and just chatting. And honestly, an incredible career so far. Still loads more to go. Keep experimenting, sir.
Thank you. Thank you very much. This is Tony Allen on James Peterson Worldwide.